Good morning, Chicago. I'm Patrick Smith.
I'm Mariah Wolfel.
And you're listening to Say More, live from WBEZ. Memorial Day weekend is the unofficial start to summer in Chicago. It's also when the city lays out its plans to prevent summer violence. City leaders did that in a press conference yesterday.
Today, we've got Chicago's Deputy Mayor for Community Safety here to dive deeper into what he's going to do to make our neighborhood safer.
What do you want to know about the city's efforts to reduce crime and violence? What makes you feel safe?
We want to hear directly from you. The number is 866-915-9239. That's 866-915-WBEZ.
What do things look like in your part of town? What do you want the city to do about it?
If you're in the suburbs, tell us what your town is doing to improve safety that you think Chicago could steal.
The number again, 866-915-9239.
Now, the news.
Good morning, Chicago. Happy Friday. I'm Patrick Smith. This is Mariah Wolfel. Hey, Mariah.
Hello. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday. We fact-checked it. It is Friday. It's not just Friday. It's a Friday before a long weekend. It's a very, very exciting time.
Yes, sir.
Memorial Day weekend is the unofficial start to summer in Chicago, and there are so many amazing things about summertime in Chicago, but unfortunately, it's also just a fact that violence goes up in the summer. So today we've got Chicago's Deputy Mayor for Community Safety here to tell us what he's going to do to prevent that from happening. Deputy Mayor Emmanuel Andre is here to take your questions. He's going to be on the show coming up in just a minute. So give us a call, 866-915-9239. That's 866-915-WBEZ. What do things look like in your neighborhood or your town? What do you want the city to do about it to make it safer? 866-915-9239. Mariah, I mentioned it's a long weekend. I have to say, I'm like honored that you are here filling in for Mary Dixon because you have maybe the most busy week of anyone coming up, I think.
It's a bit of a marathon and a sprint somehow.
Yeah.
I'm both racing, but it's also not ending. but I'm honored to be here. It's a joy to co-host with you and fill in for Mary Dixon. I do have a crazy week ahead, which is that I'm traveling to Rome to cover Mayor Brandon Johnson meeting the Pope. Not something that was on my bucket list for this year, but when it was announced that he was going to Rome, this is the largest now international stage that the mayor will be on. I followed him to D.C. when that at that time was the largest stage he was on to testify about the city's sanctuary city laws. And now he's going to meet with Pope Leo to talk about, you know, their common interests in protecting Chicagoans, as they put it. You know, Pope Leo has obviously been a little bit outspoken against President Donald Trump's actions on immigration enforcement. And that's something that the mayor certainly resonates with the mayor. The mayor, you know, is the son of a preacher and had a pretty significant religious upbringing, and that his faith plays a big role in his governing. So it's going to be an interesting trip, and I'm going to bring it all to WBEZ live from Rome.
Yeah, and hopefully you'll join us on Say More next week to give us an update from Vatican City.
You know,
you mentioned you've traveled with the mayor before. Obviously, when you're traveling, you know, with him, you're traveling not with him. You're not like part of his traveling party, but you're traveling to cover him. What are you hoping? And I'm putting you on the spot here, but like, what do you hope to get out of being there with him before and after he meets with the Pope?
I want to know how he's, again, like prepping for this massive moment. How do you represent Chicago on an international stage? It's no secret. I mean, we're talking about violence that Chicago is spoken about on the national level and probably internationally too, in a pretty negative light when it comes to violence. And so how does he represent Chicago in that way? And what does he get out of this? This isn't a, you know, this is being funded by World Business Chicago, which is a quasi-private public, you know, group, the city's tourism arm. And so I'm just wondering how he represents Chicago, what asks he has for the Pope in terms of bringing back for Chicagoans.
So that will be some of the biggest news next week. Again, stay with us here at WBEZ for Mariah's reporting from Rome when Mayor Brandon Johnson travels there to meet with the Pope. As he's been dubbed. To me, the biggest news of today is the fact that all of the charges against the so-called Broadview Six were dropped yesterday by federal prosecutors. They had been charged with federal crimes for protesting immigration enforcement. Then those charges were permanently dismissed yesterday. It came after felony charges had already been dropped, all tied to a fight over grand jury transcripts. It's a little bit complex, as things tend to be when they're in the court system. But I also think this is a really important moment when it comes to federal prosecutors and the justice system here in Chicago. So I wanted to bring on John Seidel, who covers the federal courts for the Sun-Times. Hey, John, how you doing?
Good. How are you guys?
Doing well, John. I got to say, the main reason I wanted to have you on is that yesterday you said you had never seen anything like what took place at federal court yesterday in your 11 years of covering the courts. I got to say, you are not prone to hyperbole. So when you say something like that, I take notice. Why was yesterday so stunning to you?
Well, just to set the scene a little bit, you know, like the U.S. Attorney's Office in Chicago has long been like one of the most well-regarded in the country. And I think that's continued in very practical ways, even as our politics have become more divided over the last decade or so. But what you had yesterday, I mean, I identified three or four things that really stood out to me. First of all, you had the sitting U.S. attorney who doesn't normally appear in court, just so people know. It's not normal for the U.S. attorney to be stepping up to the judge. It happens, but not often. He stepped up to permanently dismiss a case because of apparent misconduct by his team in front of the grand jury that handed up the original indictment in this case. Okay? I mean, again, in 11 years, I can't think of a time that I've seen that in this building. That was stunning. Second of all, after abandoning the case and any effort to prove these defendants guilty of a crime beyond a reasonable doubt, the U.S. attorney nevertheless went on to criticize their behavior in this public forum in the courtroom, saying that what they did outside this Broadview facility was, quote, unacceptable in a civilized society. Again, for the prosecutor to be criticizing the behavior of somebody he's no longer prosecuting, don't think I've seen that before. And then he actually received a direct rebuke from the judge. This, you know, who had already, like, you can tell that she said she's shocked by what she saw in the grand jury proceedings and the fact that this was kind of hidden from her. But specifically, she told Andrew Boutros, who's the U.S. attorney, that he was significantly undermining any mea culpa he had been presenting to her by continuing to vilify the defendants who had just been cleared. So again, in the times that I've seen a U.S. attorney, try a case. Mm-hmm. I've seen a U.S. attorney argue to a judge. I've never seen a U.S. attorney get any kind of pushback, any kind of rebuke like that from a judge. So that's another thing that really stood out to me. And then to top it all off, there was this weird dynamic where the judge in this case was actually once nominated for Boutros's job. She was nominated by President Joe Biden to be U.S. attorney in Chicago. She was never confirmed because J.D. Vance, who was a senator at the time, was protesting the indictment of Donald Trump and blocked her confirmation. So it was just all of that together. It's just like I can't think of a comparable moment in my 11 years at the courthouse, and that's kind of what I was trying to convey.
Yeah, John, and the judge in this case said she was, quote, incredibly shocked by prosecutors' behavior. What exactly do we know about what they did here, and why is it so bad?
Right. So, yeah, to get into it a little bit, she identified, I believe, three different things. One is something called vouching, which is known as a big no-no in the legal world. So what it means is that while seeking the indictment from the grand jury, which is, of course, a panel that meets in secret, 16 to 23 people who are asked to find probable cause here, she had apparently at some point put her own credibility on the line, the prosecutor did. And in some fashion where she says something along the lines of, like, I wouldn't bring this case if it wasn't warranted, if it wasn't just. We don't know exactly what was said, but that's kind of like the concept of vouching. The prosecutor putting their own credibility on the line to support the criminal charges. So that was one thing. Second of all, there was apparently substantive communications by the prosecutor with grand jurors outside of the grand jury room. That's not supposed to happen. And then third, there was apparently, some grand jurors were apparently dismissed from deliberations after signaling their disagreement with the government's case. That was another point of concern. And again, grand juries, people have kind of taken a cynical view of them over the years. People say prosecutor could get a grand jury to indict a ham sandwich, right? Meaning that, like, it doesn't take much. But we're seeing increasingly grand jurors reject cases that are brought by federal prosecutors. And in fact, it turned out that during efforts to secure an indictment in this case, the grand jury actually did reject criminal charges at one point. Mm. So that's some of the detail that came out yesterday.
So, John, I'm going to try to kind of combine two threads here that I think are already combined, which is, one, you've reported about this, you know, grand juries rejecting cases brought by U.S. attorneys here in Chicago, which is rare, and also U.S. attorneys here in Chicago either dropping or losing cases, failing to get convictions, which is also rare. And then separately, we're hearing nationally a lot about the weaponization of the Justice Department, about the politicization of the Justice Department. You know, U.S. Attorney Boutros has told you that his office is not political. When you think about what happened yesterday and what we learned about what's happened in this Broadview 6 case, a high-profile case involving politicians, what did we learn more about how the U.S. Attorney's Office is operating here in Chicago?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is kind of basic, but I mean, something's wrong. And I want to be clear, you know, the U.S. Attorney, Andrew Boutros, claimed he had no knowledge about any of this until about 3 weeks ago, and he's met with the chief judge and he put together protocols to try and keep it happening again. Also, the lead prosecutors in this case, for the record, have been with the office for a long time, since before Andrew Boutros became U.S. attorney. Mm. But a big question I had yesterday was, like, you know, why is this happening? If this is conduct that we've never seen before, especially with prosecutors who have been there for a long time, what's driving it? What's forcing them to take these steps that they wouldn't have otherwise taken? And it's, and, you know, you can easily speculate about why that might be, but just the bottom line is there seems to be an effort to win at all costs. Get that indictment, no matter what it takes. Mm. Get that conviction. I mean, this case 24 hours ago was still on track for trial, even though Andrew Boutros said he learned about this apparent misconduct 3 weeks ago. You know, I don't know if that's really what's going on. Again, we're kind of speculating here, but I'd say that is the impression from the outside looking in, that they just, you know, kind of a win at all costs approach
that is actually causing them to lose more now than they almost ever have in the past, right?
Yeah, and, you know, Boutros has tried to explain some of those lost prosecutions, saying that, you know, there were kind of an effort to charge, he called them a reactive arrest, right? You know, the federal agents who came in from out of town, they arrested these people, sought charges, but these were agents who weren't familiar with the processes here in Chicago. I don't think that explanation applies here with these prosecutors and this indictment. But yeah, that's kind of how he's tried to explain it away.
John Seidel covers federal courts for the Chicago Sun-Times. John, thank you as always for joining us, and you know, enjoy your Friday and your weekend.
Thank you too, guys.
So we are talking crime, punishment, and safety on Say More today. We want to know, what does safety mean to you? What questions do you have for Chicago's deputy mayor for community safety? The number is 866-915-9239. Mariah, we're going to have Deputy Mayor Emmanuel Andre come on in just a minute. We get to ask him questions. Our listeners get to ask him questions. The number 866-915-9239. He spoke yesterday at a press conference, though, right, laying out sort of the city's plans for making the city safer in the summer, right?
Yeah, and for Chicagoans who follow what the city's safety plans are for the summer, there's not much new here. I think their general demeanor is, we're going to keep doing what has been working. They said, you know, last summer was the safest summer in 60 years, and so we're leaning into what works, which is partnerships with community organizations and sister agencies like the CTA, like Chicago Public Schools, and also, you know, crucially, community violence intervention groups, which actually go in and, as you know, intervene in violence and conflicts as they arise and try to stop retaliatory violence by, like, going to a hospital to talk to a victim of a gun crime to make sure that they're not going to go and retaliate. And so they're leaning into those partnerships. They held this at a health and wellness resource fair in the back of the Yards neighborhood, which kind of gives a window into how the mayor's office sees safety in general. We're going to talk more about that with the deputy mayor. So please call us with your questions to, you know, talk about what safety means to you and your ideas and what questions you have for him.
Yeah, I'm excited to dive deeper into that plan, into that press conference, and whatever other questions you have with Deputy Mayor Emmanuel Andre. Again, the deputy mayor for community safety for Chicago is joining us in just a minute. He's here to take your questions. The number's 866-915-9239. Deputy Mayor Emmanuel Andre taking your questions in just a minute. But first, let's talk to Lisa Labas in Studio One. Hey, Lisa.
Hey there, guys. Hi. It's Friday.
Hello.
It's Friday. Happy Friday.
Are we sure it's not already Saturday? It is Friday. All right.
You're listening to Say More here on WBEZ, where we're asking, what do you want to know about preventing summer violence? What ideas do you have about reducing violence in Chicago and the suburbs? The number is 866-915-9239. If you've got questions for Chicago's Deputy Mayor for Community Safety, give us a call, 866-915-WBEZ. I'm Patrick Smith.
I'm Mariah Wolfel. And that's right, our guest is Emmanuel Andre. He is the Chicago's Deputy Mayor for Community Safety. Good morning.
Good morning, Mariah. Good morning, Patrick. Thank you for having me, and happy Friday.
Happy Friday. Thanks for being here.
We're so glad you're here. And we are going to start off really basic by just asking, what does the Deputy Mayor for Community Safety do?
Thank you. The Deputy Mayor for Community Safety is really charged with executing and implementing the mayor's safety plan, and the mayor's vision, which is the journey towards the safest and most affordable big city in America. And this mayor is particularly, Mayor Brandon Johnson, is particularly interested in root causes to violence. So that's what it looks like. So in terms of the day-to-day, it looks like helping coordinate those actions to be able to implement that plan.
I'd imagine a lot of listeners are like, oh, yeah, the police superintendent, that's who's in charge of safety, and what do we need this other person for? So explain the difference between yourself and Superintendent Snelling. Not personally, but the difference in your roles.
Yeah, I think some of the main difference between the roles, Superintendent Snelling is in charge of all policing in terms of, the police force and the day-to-day. He's the manager over there, and really focus on policing. But as most of us know, safety is more than just policing. Mm-hmm. So it's the coordination of really the full force of government or city efforts to be able to bring, in terms of this strategy, this ecosystem towards safety that we're talking about. So my role is to really help coordinate between all those, so between CPD, Office of Emergency Management, various other offices, all along the safety ecosystem.
Yeah, at the press conference that you helped lead yesterday, you talked about that being much more coordinated with community violence intervention groups to let CPD focus their resources. Could you kind of talk about how that's going to be much more coordinated, as you put it, this summer?
Yeah, thank you for that question. When we think about community violence intervention, we're really talking about now some of the, how do we get to the root causes of things, and how do we intervene before this conflict gets to an explosion? And then this way, too, to be able to make way and give space more for CPD to be able to have focus on their resources that they currently have around issues of, issues of direct violence, especially, because they're really the first responders. Mm. So we're really focusing on not just the day after or the day right or the minutes right after, but just how do we get there right before? So Chicago has been, taking a lead, I think, in the ecosystem of expanding community violence interruption in their work. And we've seen some really big, it's been good, I think, so far in terms of what we've seen. Because historically, we know where, when you look at violence on a map of Chicago, unfortunately, we know where it's going to happen. And we know how it happens. And so there's lots of history behind that. And CVI helps to interrupt that. But it's not just CVI and also CPD. It is also just the day-to-day Chicagoans. I think that has a big impact.
We should define, you say CVI, Mariah mentioned it, community violence intervention. This is folks, often people with criminal backgrounds or people who have served time in prison who are working with people in their communities. They have experience in their own neighborhoods talking to people who might be closest to gun violence to try to prevent it. Just want to make sure people know what you mean when you say CVI. Go ahead, Mariah.
You're talking about this coordinated effort, and the mayor talked a lot about that and how it should include everyday Chicagoans, as you just mentioned, including adults, whether you have teens or not, whether you have kids or not, how everyone should be engaged in coordinating with youth. Let's kind of take a listen to what he's saying. He's talking about preventing teen takeovers in particular.
Before this weekend ends, I'm calling on all of the parents and adults in this city to speak directly to your young people. I'm going to speak directly to my children. I'm going to speak to as many children as I possibly can to let them know that these unauthorized gatherings can be reckless and dangerous, and we want to make sure that their lives are protected.
What was going through your mind as the mayor made that appeal yesterday?
Urgency. As I heard the mayor make that appeal, just really urgency. And again, the mayor is very, I think part of the vision here is that, you know, if we define safety not just as the absence of violence, but really the presence of belonging, of knowing, right? That's what he said, knowing where your kids are, but it's not just your kids. This is the village kids. So knowing who the kids are. Especially when it comes to when we talk about teen trends. That's critically important.
Let me ask, the teen trends or teen takeovers, how do you view them? Because I think there's two ways to look at them, right? They get a lot of media attention, and they are certainly disruptive, and there is sometimes violence, deadly violence at them. But I'm also curious, do you think that they are uniquely violent, or is it just that they are uniquely public? Like, how important to you is combating teen takeovers when you think about overall safety in Chicago?
Well, it's all important, critically important in terms of overall safety. And I'll be very frank with you. Teen trends have taken a good amount of our time, okay. And it is right now. We're increasing coordination. I mean, we're having weekly meetings, multiple meetings throughout the week. So many of them happen that you never hear of. Mm. But I have to also be frank, you know, so when we talk about teen trends, sometimes it is a group of young people wanting to get together just in an organic way. And sometimes young people feel like they're programmed out. We have a program for everything. And how do we create spaces for young people to be together in an organic way? I mean, I was just at the park just this weekend, and I'm walking there with my 8-year-old, and we walk into the park. It's just amazing what happens when a group of young people get together. And she's just playing and connecting, and they're creating all these games. Now, again, I do not want to minimize the seriousness of this, and it absolutely happens. But we have to be able to stay steadfast and be able to create safe spaces to be able to help help give space for more young people to be together. But when trends are happening in terms of there's lots of coordinated efforts happening between CPD, CVI, all of our emergency management infrastructures. In addition to now, one thing we're really excited about to hearing and seeing more parents coming out, more parents having a coordinated efforts, and more people from community coming out to be able to support that.
You're listening to Say More. We are talking with Emmanuel Andre, Chicago's Deputy Mayor for Community Safety. He is here to take your questions about preventing summer violence or improving safety in the city overall. The number is 866-915-9239. We're talking about young people, so why don't we talk to Charles in Portage Park, who has a question. Go ahead, Charles.
Hello. Why not jobs for youth? I understand Mayor Jensen lives not far from a community garden. Get the kids involved in lower-level jobs, society jobs, apprenticeships. There's got to be a way to let our children have the opportunity to grow if they choose to do so. I believe all this is related to poverty and war. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for your call, Charles. What do you say, Deputy Mayor?
Thank you for your question, Charles. I think Charles, to some extent, is right on. We saw last year the mayor have invested in, I think, well over 31,000 young people were employed during the summer, to Charles' point. And by all accounts, last year was considered one of the safest summers in all of Chicago. Now, again, it's not enough. You know, one person is one person too many. But Charles is on. He's on to something. And it's something that we want to continue to grow even this year. So, again, going back to the power that everyday people have, think about your own personal place of employment. Mm-hmm. Is there an opportunity to create an internship there for a young person to be able to be engaged in some form or fashion? So it's something we take seriously.
Yeah, you're referring to One Summer Chicago, which is, for Charles' sake, the city's summer jobs program that has now been renamed Chicago Youth Works. It employs kids from 14 to 24 years old. As a city council reporter, that's something that's a big part of the story of Mayor Brandon Johnson's first tenure. He campaigned on doubling the amount of youth jobs that are available to kids over the summer and has slowly inched that number back up from a pandemic lull that program saw.
We are talking violence and safety today on Say More with Chicago's Deputy Mayor for Community Safety, Emmanuel Andre. The number is 866-915-9239. If you've got a question about preventing violence in Chicago or making Chicago safer, give us a call. What ideas do you have about public safety? 866-915-9239. Deputy Mayor, speaking of ideas, you've talked a lot about, you know, the police have one job and I have a different job, and we've got to work on root causes. I wonder if I could ask you to get specific here. What's something that is in the mayor's safety plan, that is in your safety plan, that is about preventing violence or making the city safer that might surprise people? And something that's a priority that people might not think of when they think of safety.
Yeah, I think a few things pop up immediately. I think this summer the mayor's focus on preventing gender-based violence, it's given how intimate that can be, and a lot of times violence starts at home. I think that's a very, very serious focus for the mayor. In addition to that, we have some of the work around reentry. People coming home from being incarcerated, what does it look like to be able to be engaged and make sure? I know we spend so much time talking about young people and youth and teen trends, but the reality is people are suffering without. And when someone's returning home, where are they returning to? How are we welcoming them as a city? What does that mean? And to be able to have people have accountability within the city. So I think some of the reentry work is absolutely critical, in addition to the work with victims, surviving victims of violence. I think it was Bell Hooks that once said, you know, rarely, if ever, are any of us healed in isolation. Healing is an act of communion. So what does that mean just as a city, you know, as we think about safety, you know, and how safety healing should be part of that when we're looking at things. So those are some of the things that we're really serious about.
I really enjoyed reading the tribe's profile of you when you started your job as deputy mayor. And they started by talking about drill music in Chicago and how that genre really came out of a generation of kids whose lives were traumatically affected by violence and gun violence. And it was part of drill music became part of the response to that violence. And you spoke kind of with empathy about that music, which can also obviously very much glorify violence, sometimes promote it directly in real time. I'm just wondering, how do you balance, you know, helping kids feel seen in their trauma that they express in this music while also kind of teaching them that violence is unacceptable? It's a fine line that the mayor walks constantly. How do you kind of, struggle with that or just think about that?
Yeah, I appreciate it. It's a tough struggle. I mean, especially when you talk about drill music, I think it's one of, Chicago is noted as one of the birthplaces of drill music. It's to some extent for me, it's a beautiful ugly. It's a beautiful creation in terms of when you think about the art itself of dance and music and beats, and it's being used throughout our American colleges, parties all over. But then the ugly side about it, when you look and listen to what's being said in terms of death and what that looks like. So there's all sorts of difficulties on that. Last week I was actually at a movie theater with my kids and watching the Michael Jackson movie. And we had the opportunity to see Michael and his dad and the preparation that came from that. And there was a natural thing, but there was a natural grooming. So Michael was talking about the environment that he was in. A lot of it was love and dance. But now what we see in Chicago is sometimes in the communities that's most forgotten, young people will create what they see, even if it's heightened in a way. But I think it is a calling. I think it is young people speaking loudly. I think we need to, it's here. We need to listen, we need to embrace, and we need to figure out how to help change it and how to help impact it. But I don't think we go anywhere if we completely ignore it.
Why don't we take a couple more callers? Let's talk to Frank in Garfield Ridge, who has another comment or question about youth jobs. Go ahead, Frank. Morning, Frank. Okay, we'll see if Frank comes back on the line. Why don't we talk to Ariel in Woodlawn. Hey, Ariel, go ahead.
Hello? Hello?
Hey, Ariel? Hello, Ariel?
Hello?
Hey, can you hear me?
Hello?
Okay. Oh. Well, we're having some trouble here. I don't know if we're going to get to talk with Ariel. Ariel's question was saying that teenagers need places where they are not being observed so that they can socialize. They need opportunities to connect. How do we – you were just talking about how much time teen trends, teen takeovers are taking, how much coordination there is. How do you make sure that teenagers actually also have the freedom to, you know, be teenagers?
Yeah, it's absolutely critical. It's somewhat weird here for me right now. I'm at Navy Pier, and which is, I think, one of Chicago's most beautiful asset and one's most powerful asset. Millions of people probably come here yearly from all over the country, if not the world. But at the same time, there's a good amount of Chicago population teens who've never seen this place. Mm. And I know the mayor was very instrumental a couple weeks back, had a teen bash right here where over 1,500 young people showed up, was bused from all over the city, and it was a great success by all counts. So I think it's us being more intentional around creating those spaces and letting go. You know, so then it's not just happening in an organic and unhealthy way. Mm. I think more of that is needed, to be very frank with you. More engagement is needed. And then also acknowledging the times where we're at. I think we need more studios, you know, throughout Chicago for young people to be able to create whatever that looks like and to be able to help shape and mold. I know, not to go back to some of the stuff about drill music, but if you look at some of those early videos, they were all happening in someone's house, and you got to see that in real time in someone's front yard, and there was nothing there to help mold that organic energy, that organic creativity that young people have. I think we need to be consistent in creating spaces to be able to help absorb and mold that.
Okay, I want to try this again. Let's talk to Frank. Frank, can you hear me?
Yes, can you hear me?
We can hear you. This is amazing. All right, Frank, what's your question or your comment?
Thank you. No, so the first and foremost, I want to commend the mayor's administration for the work that they're doing with youth employment. I've seen a lot of youth getting employed. I don't want to get into the details on how, but I've seen a lot of youth that are coming from challenging neighborhoods that are becoming actually bread earners for some of their families. And I think the root of all evil and violence is poverty. And that's the angle that we should be looking into to combat violence. One, and lastly, I want to see more investment in athletics. My kids go to private school, and the support that they get for the athletics that keep the kids so busy. And, like, for example, my kid goes to high school, and he just spends most of the time in school doing athletics and schoolwork and everything. And I see when we compete with public schools and we see the lack of support for the athletics departments on these public schools, it's the gap is very, very wide. And I would love to see more investment in athletics on the public school system to keep these kids away from the streets.
Thanks, Frank, for your thoughts. Deputy Mayor, I'm wondering, talk about that idea of poverty being the root cause, and how is the city trying to turn, you know, summer jobs for kids into, you know, careers and opportunities to, as Frank said, become breadwinners for their families?
Thank you for the question, first of all, Frank. Yeah, Frank's definitely right on in a lot of ways. Again, if you were to look at a map as to where most consistent violence happens throughout the city, it is in areas and neighborhood that has been disinvested, and I think some of the challenges we may have sometimes is being able to take almost this ahistorical approach when we're responding to issues of crime. So, and Chicago has a long history there in terms of when you look at redlining and what have we done, what are the areas that we've disinvested in. Which is really critical and which has helped get us to where we're at to some extent. But on the other side, to what Frank's saying about the importance of being able to invest in some of the young people are now becoming the breadwinners for their families in some of these jobs that we're hoping to be able to convert from just summer youth to be able to be something more long-term, which is absolutely critical. I mean, we want to be able to compete with those who are recruiting young people as early as 12, 13, 14 to sell drugs, to break into cars. Like, we want to be the biggest competitor against that, to be able to help keep young people engaged. That's critically important. And to the last point about just importance of sports, it really shows in terms of this idea of discipline and consistency and engage. It's that natural energy, that natural creativity that young people have, and making sure that we're creating spaces for them to be able to invest in that and for that to be able to flourish. That's absolutely critical. I know this year and last year also, we do Light of the Night activations throughout the city, where there's all sorts of summer activities, basketball tournaments. I mean, you name it. A lot of that stuff is happening, and we want to continue to grow in that. And again, one last thing, you know, some of this has been in line with the disinvestments we've seen over years and decades into arts programming at schools and athletic programming at schools. So unfortunately, that was the direction that we took previously, and in some ways, we're still paying for some of those decisions.
Frank, thank you so much for your call. You're listening to Say More. We're talking with Chicago's Deputy Mayor for Community Safety. Coming up, we're going to have more of your questions, more of your calls. The number is 866-915-9239. Do you think Chicago is safe enough? Do you feel safe? What do you want to see happen to make the city a safer place for everyone? 866-915-WBEZ is the number. More with Emmanuel Andre, Deputy Mayor Emmanuel Andre, in just a moment. But first, here's Lisa Labas. You're listening to Say More on WBEZ. Memorial Day weekend is the unofficial start to summer in Chicago. It's also when the city lays out its plans to prevent summer violence. Today, we've got Chicago's Deputy Mayor for Community Safety here to tell us what he's doing to make our neighborhood safer. He's here to take your questions, so give us a call at 866-915-9239. That's 866-915-WBEZ. My name is Patrick Smith.
I'm Mariah Wolfel, in for Mary Dixon. And our guest, again, is Emmanuel Andre, Chicago Deputy Mayor for Community Safety. Thank you so much for being here, sir. Last year, Chicago saw a dramatic decline in shootings and murders, down to historic lows. What do you think was the biggest reason for that drop?
You know, it's always unfair to just point to one reason, because there's so many people. Again, this idea of ecosystem of safety, there's so many people involved in that. But I do think a lot of it had to be with some of the investments that was made in terms of the amount of people who we saw engaged throughout the summer who were employed. I think all of that helped. I think that definitely had an impact. I think over the years that we've seen the investments that's been happening in CVI to be able to invest in conflict resolutions and everything else like that, I think all of that helped, in addition to everything else that normally happens, you know, throughout the city. So I would hate for one group or one person to take credit for everything, but it was a city win in a lot of ways in terms of the ecosystem.
Let's take a couple callers back to back. Why don't we talk to Adam in Logan Square? Go ahead, Adam.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Of course.
This is Adam. I'm with Preservation Chicago and calling in about Chicago's roller rinks and bowling alleys. We used to have a ton of them all over the city, and so many of them have closed over the years. I remember when I was a lot younger, roller skating at Rainbow and recently, Skyway Lanes down in Jeffrey Manor on the far south side, black-owned family business, 75 years, and they just closed because I just couldn't make enough ends meet, you know, financially. And you think, gosh, you know, the city, it would be great to see the city supporting these kinds of bowling alleys and roller rinks, because they're really healthy ways for kids to congregate, to get together in a constructive way, a productive way, a safe way. And we were thinking, you know, it's really hard to start them up after they close, try to keep the ones that are still open going. But then all those closed Chicago public schools, you know, a lot of them have gyms and that with hardwood polished floors could be pop-up roller rinks in the summertime. Anyway, just ways of trying to use Chicago's what we got, the built environment, to help create healthy communities, and just hoping that the city can do more to help out with roller rinks and bowling alleys.
Thanks, Adam. What do you think, Deputy Mayor, this idea of the city creating more third places for young people beyond parks and beaches?
Yeah, I think Adam is definitely on to something, is right on, and it's something that the mayor actually acknowledges. Even within the People's Plan, it's about people and space-based, or place-based, excuse me. I think it's absolutely critical. And we have seen, you know, just in terms of the impact on small businesses that happens, you know, when these places disappear, they now become deserts in some ways where you now have to travel completely out of your way to be able to get to a roller rink or to be able to get to a bowling alley. And I think that's absolutely critically important that we continue to invest back in those and continue to invest in small businesses, which also have an important key role to play in terms of the ecosystem of safety. And it goes, again, back to this idea, belonging and engagement. You know, now you have something to be engaged with on a random evening for a young person, which I think is critically important.
What about Adam's idea here about trying to make use of those abandoned, or not abandoned, but shuttered schools that are around the city that were closed to be part of the solution here? And I'll give one example. You know, I know the Institute for Nonviolence Chicago, which is one of these community violence intervention groups you're talking about, they are based out of a former school, you know, on the west side of Chicago. What about trying to make good use of those buildings instead of having them just sit there?
That too is critically important. We've seen that, and we've seen some successes in that, actually. You mentioned the West Side. There's over on Central and Madison, there's a space called the Aspire Center, which was a school that was closed several years ago under previous administrations. And what we're seeing is several organizations are now housed in that school and have a direct impact as to what's happening on that important corridor in that community. And even as late as last summer, you know, there was a huge just public event where it was just a sports event plus a resource fair. It was absolutely beautiful where you had people playing basketball and you had this intergenerational space of elders coming into space with young people and just being able to be in community with each other in an organic, safe, and healthy way. So that is those are excellent examples of being able to make use of those spaces.
Thanks for your call, Adam. Let's talk to Rich in Hyde Park. Go ahead, Rich.
Hey, folks. Thanks for taking my call. And I wanted to say we appreciate the efforts of the deputy mayor and everyone else who's trying to address this issue. And as a parent with teenage and preteen children, I feel like we're asking the city to do the job that some parents should be doing. I mean, work programs are fantastic, and I think they're very beneficial, and other activities that we've been talking about. But honestly, these teen takeover activities are not happening during the workday. They're happening late at night where these kids should be at home. And so I wanted to just bring into the conversation, what can we do to help those parents that, for whatever reason, seem not to be able to keep a handle on their kids? You will not find either of my children at any of these things because they're in the house where they should be. And so why is this happening? And again, when you see a group of 1,500 kids running around downtown, we got to remember there's hundreds of thousands of kids who are not running around downtown. They're at home where they're supposed to be. So this is an exception, not the rule. But the exception is causing major challenges. So how do we help these families that seem not to be able to kind of keep a handle on the angst and anxiety and all those things that might be driving kids into these scenarios?
Go ahead, Deputy Mayor. What do you say to Rich's point here?
Yeah, thank you for your question, Rich. Rich is right on. I mean, these are absolutely the exceptions and not the rules. This happens, and we've been doing much more concerted effort to be able to look at how many of these are happening throughout the city. And there's a good amount of them that happens without any issue whatsoever. The mayor is very clear, though, in terms of what the expectation is around the adults and the parents, what's needed in terms of better engagement, what's needed in terms of more responsibility. Although Rich starts to bring on another issue, though, in terms of unfortunately not all parents are in equal situations. And what does that mean? You know, so I think sometimes we make assumptions as to who's parenting who and what that looks like, what those expectations are. And I do think we need more resources to be able to help parents who are struggling throughout to be able to move this further.
So should resources for parents, especially ones who don't have them or can't seek them out themselves, should that be a priority for your office?
Yeah, I you know, it's part of it's part of the ecosystem of when we think about making Chicago the safest and most affordable big city. Absolutely, it should be a priority. One of the things we're looking at in this office, just to give you an example, well, what does that look like? We're very interested in increasing engagement with, for those who don't, who've never heard of the Juvenile Temporary Detention Center. So this is a space that young people go when they're in serious trouble. But most of the average stay there is just over 30 days. And what we've found is there's a lot of times people are cycling in and out of those spaces. Young people are cycling in and out of those spaces. So what does it look like to be able to engage with those young people? But when you start to reach out, it all a lot of times point back to the parents, and we make this assumption that parents are there. We've been over-dependent on incarceration in the past years, and now we're seeing some of the impacts of that. You know, there's parents who are not there. You know, there's grandmothers and great-grandmothers who are raising children, and it creates a very different dynamic. So how do we be intentional around engaging that, engaging them and being able to give the support they needed, which is the importance of some of the reentry work we're doing.
Before we end our show, and thanks to everyone who called, and Deputy Mayor, thanks for taking your time, I do have to ask, your predecessor, Garion Gatewood, was abruptly fired despite this historic decrease in violence that we've been talking about. I know you weren't part of the administration when that happened. Have you talked to former Deputy Mayor Gatewood? Has he helped in your transition? Do you have any idea why he was fired?
No, I don't have an idea. We've, you know, me and Deputy Gatewood have not had an opportunity to check in. I have an immense amount of respect for him. I mean, I think, you know, this is a journey that we're all in. And in administrations, you see administrations make changes all the time. But I'm not familiar with that in terms of the exact reasons why. But with that said, I do look forward to connecting.
Do abrupt firings like this make you wary of working for the administration at all? That you, in being confident that you'll have the support to carry out, you know, I know your job is carrying out the mayor's vision for community safety, but obviously you have a career of expertise in this area that qualifies you for the role. And so does that concern you at all?
I wouldn't, you know, this role, the reason I took this role is because the urgency of the moment. And you don't know what tomorrow brings. So it makes it even more critical to do everything you can in this moment that you have. Nothing's permanent in some ways. So does it concern me like that? No, not necessarily. Actually, it highlights just the fire and the urgency of this moment, that to be able to make sure we continue this role that we're on and towards the safest big city.
I'm wondering, this, the safest big city, you know, last year we talked about, we had this historic drop in violence. This year, shootings and murders are up about 5% compared to last year. So more or less we've plateaued. Big drop, now a plateau. I'm wondering, how do we reset what the sort of baseline level of violence is in Chicago, where it's not 400 murders, it's 200 murders or 100 murders? Because I'm sure we all hope we would just continue to see a precipitous decline. It's not what we're seeing. You know, maybe it's to be expected. You see a big drop, you might see a little bit of a leveling off. How do we reset the level of violence in Chicago so that it's much lower than it is today?
Yeah, I think we have to continue investing in what we're seeing working, and we have to even go deeper, to be very frank with you. I think, especially when some of the violence, some of the shootings that we're seeing, there's a good amount of those that are retaliatory. Like, how do we even invest more in that? And being able to interrupt that and being able to say, hey, look, one is too many and over 400 or 500 is really unacceptable in a lot of ways. But making sure we dig deeper. I do think that's why I mentioned before, there's this issue of, you know, making sure everyone in this ecosystem has a role to play to be able to interrupt violence. And that includes, you know, even some of our media partners. You know, how do we report on these? What happens a year later? You know, where are the survivors right now? What do they need? What does that look like? Mm-hmm. So I think all of those are critical, and to be able to change that expectation that we have.
Emmanuel Andre is Chicago's Deputy Mayor for Community Safety. Deputy Mayor Andre, thank you so much for joining us, and thanks everyone for your calls. That is it for Say More today. The show is produced by Maha Ahmed, Sienna Greaves, Micah Yason, Linnea Dominic, and Andrea Guthman, with production help from Gina Montagna, who is leaving us for London. Thanks for all your great work, Gina. Dan Tucker is our executive producer. Katie Roberts and Dave Miska are our engineers. We'll be off Monday for the holiday. On Tuesday, street festivals, hot or not. That's Tuesday at 10 o'clock. I'm Patrick Smith.
And I'm Mariah Wolfel. And Here and Now is up next.